And I want to welcome everyone to tonight's broadcast. Today is Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025. I hope everyone had a great holiday weekend. I really do. I do know that with me right now is John Moore, who spent the last couple of days speaking at a conference in which, hey, how great is that, right? Talking about his subject. So I'm glad he's on with me tonight to talk about what he spoke about at the conference, as well as a lot of other things, a lot of things going on right now. And I want to thank everyone who is present with us in the chat in Rumble. Thank you so very much for being there. By the way, if you didn't have a chance, if you guys don't mind, and ladies, go back and listen to or watch the last episode of 4928, Agenda of Violence and Death and Their Enablers, which was, I got a lot of interesting feedback on that. And I want to thank the people who sent me emails and such. Thank you very much for that. So, but nonetheless, there is a lot to talk about. And thank you for joining us in the Rumble chat, but follow us on Rumble. And, hey, if you want to give us a thumbs up. If not, oh, well, all right, with me, the Liberty Man, as he is known, thelibertyman.com. That's his website. With me is John Moore. John, how are you, sir?
It's good to be with you, Doug.
Good to have you. All right. We've got a lot to talk about, there's world events taking place, and then there seems to be this awakening with respect to Operation Warp Speed. Whether that's a thing or not, you folks, you guys decide. Okay. But however, it seems like there is some level of, awakening or hate. So everything I was told was wrong, at least at the administration side. So we're going to be getting into that. And is that genuine? Is that really genuine, or is that kind of like a cover? Because, what else can I say? Body language, I got to tell you, seems rather genuine. Seems rather genuine coming from President Trump. But anyway, this is stuff we'll be talking about. John, where do you want to start, my friend?
Well, we can start. Yes, this past weekend, I was a speaker at the Hear the Watchman conference in Springfield, Missouri. It was good to see everybody and get caught up with a few old friends I got to see there and talk to. I talked about two topics over the weekend. The main one, I believe, was...
See there and talk to.
Sorry about that. Sorry about that. That was my bad. Go ahead.
That's okay. Confirmation from Catherine Austin Fitz, who was a deputy secretary under President Bush and HUD, the highest level former government official to ever confirm what I've been talking about since about 2001, 2002 publicly. I started looking into it in the spring of late spring, early summer of 2000, 26 years ago. The fact that I found out then that the government's been preparing for an extinction-level event beginning in 1997 when they started building the shelters. Well, what Catherine Austin Fitz did was provide confirmation from her private sources that the government, the last several decades, has spent $21 trillion to build 170 shelters, most underground, some under the ocean, connected by high-speed rail. It's hard to imagine that amount of money being spent, the technology that went into this, the high-speed rails that are concealed from the public. I have one friend who has access to these shelters within these government officials. They call them hotels. And he says, John, I don't trust the engineering, and he's not going to participate.
Okay. That's scary.
Well, it is. Well, every commercial building is built with some level of seismic resistance up to a certain level of the Richter scale developed by Charles F. Richter. The higher up the scale you protect from, the more expensive the structure gets until the point where they can't afford to do it. And it might be good to mention that the Richter scale is a logarithmic scale developed by Charles F. Richter, who died, I think, about 1983. Within a year of his death, the Richter scale was reduced by one full number value. You may say, well, John, what's the big deal? Here's the big deal. When you go from a 1 on the Richter scale to a 1.1, that doubles the strength of the earthquake. That's a logarithmic matter there. So if you go to the USGS, the United States Geological Survey website, you'll find all earthquakes 4.9 and lower are in black letters. 5.0 and larger are in red letters. Red, red, danger, danger. They knew 40 years ago that 40 years in the future, there'd be a dramatic increase in the number and severity of earthquakes. So in preparation to keep the public calm as long as possible, they reduced the Richter scale by one full number value. Now, within the last several weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, there's been a dramatic increase on earthquakes on what's called the Ring of Fire around the Pacific Ocean.
John, I just have to say this. And ladies and gentlemen, John, pay attention to this, because I've been getting a lot of not warnings, but people saying, hey, there are a lot of people talking Pacific Northwest, Northern California, the coast of California. People have been talking about the possibility of a huge something happening there. Okay, so exactly. Go ahead with that.
Well, earthquakes around the Pacific Rim are common. They happen a lot. But there's been a dramatic increase in the number and severity, well above what normally happens. I recall, and of course, the Cascade Mountains are not mountains at all. They're dormant or semi-dormant volcanoes. They're not mountains. They're volcanoes. My son-in-law was taking me to the airport in Metro Seattle. It's been about 4 or 5 years ago. And I pointed to Mount Hood and I said, "The thing starts smoking, you get the hell out of Dodge."
Yeah.
and it is at the beginning of doing that. We're seeing a lot of activity in the Cascade Mountains. A lot of activity in the New Madrid seismic zone, which is nearby me. Once again, there's typically one or two earthquakes here every week, but they're beginning to get more stronger to be those earthquakes. Getting back to Catherine Austin Fitz, the government has designated, I don't know, a million or so people to be in these shelters, high-level government officials, military people chosen because of their athletic ability, their academic knowledge, their musical talents, and so forth, so they can start civilization over with a mix of people with all the various skills that a civilization would need.
Thank God they're saving the oboe players, right?
Okay. Exactly. I was hoping all for decades that this confirmation would come. It's finally come. It is not mainstream news because, well, we want to make sure people go to work and keep paying their mortgages. We have to normal continue until the very last moment. That's the goal of the government. That's the goal of the mainstream media. That's the goal of people in high levels and all over our economy and our government and culture that knows about this. The only government that's really warn their people, and even that not completely that I'm aware of, is Norway. All the other 170 or more governments have not warned their people. Norway has done so for reasons I don't know, but I'm glad they did. I've also come to know that I've met a number of Swiss citizens at my various speaking events, and there's a large percentage of the Swiss population that knows about the violent earth changes that are coming within our lifetimes. And
explain, if you don't mind, okay, because when these were okay, let me back up, because you were talking about Catherine Austin Fitz, the shelters, the high speed rails. And I got one basic question, which I don't know, it might be a really ignorant question, but is there something that would connect something way on the West Coast, the shelter, the underground shelter, with way on the East Coast? Would the rail connect that?
Yeah, my understanding is the high-speed rails have them all connected. That's my understanding.
Okay. So here's a follow-up question. What the heck? I mean, if I was in charge of the U.S., I'd just go down there and say, hey, get me over to Sacramento, or get me over to or get me the hell out of Sacramento, or whatever, in terms of convenience.
Okay.
Why don't they do that?
Well, chances are that these shelters have all the conveniences a normal person would ever want. And I was just thinking while you were making that statement, Doug, if I was in charge of building these shelters and the Underground Railroad, I would have watertight doors, just like they have on submarines, so that if one part was compromised, it could be shut off from the rest of the shelters and not hurt them. That's how. Now, I live in mining country. You know, lead mines have been around my part of the world for about 200 years. In fact, where I went to high school, Herculaneum, Missouri, did have the world's largest lead smelter until the EPA finally made it too expensive and they shut it down. It was the last remaining lead smelter in the United States, which is a matter of national security. I would love to see President Trump put it back in production, because lead is a vital metal for U.S. national security. We do
of
not
course.
Have.
Yeah, we need lead.
We do not have a single lead smelter in operation in this country right now.
Wow.
Now, also my neighborhood is a battery that recycles. A factory that recycles lead batteries. So we do have that source, but that's not really a lead smelter, and they don't have the volume that a lead smelter would have. Different topic for a different day.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. But okay. So the architecture, or the construction, I should say, of these shelters, 100, and now folks think about this, 170, I didn't do the math, but 170 into a million, right? So you're looking at, I don't know.
I just pulled that number out of the air. I don't know how many people they meant to shelter.
Okay.
But, obviously, clearly, these shelters were built with a seismic resistance. I don't know what they went to, whether it's 8 or 9 or 10. Most likely using something like post-tension concrete, which would withstand most earthquakes, I believe, or steel. But I would trust post-tension concrete more than I would steel.
Right.
For those who don't know, and when I was just out of high school, my first job was working for a commercial construction company. I did post-tension concrete, so I learned a little bit about it. Post-tension concrete never cracks and never leaks. It's used to build bridges and dams and structures like that have to be incredibly strong.
And I had no idea, John, not to interrupt you, but there are different what would you call them? Types of, not types, different strengths of concrete. Which
I just
thought concrete was concrete, but no. Go ahead.
No, the strength of concrete is dependent on the aggregate you use, how many bags of cement per cubic yard, how it's dried out, if it's dried fast or if it's dried slow, and of course the steel is put in it, or because we would use both. Post-tension concrete has steel cables that are tightened up, potentially put on 30 days after the concrete cures, up to more than 20,000 pounds of tension on each steel cable. They're spaced about a foot apart through the concrete. That's a Reader's Digest version. There's a lot more to it. It's a very complex thing. In fact, as another side note, the first home in the United States built with post-tension concrete was built in my county, Crawford County, Missouri, in 1912. It's a 12,000 square foot home. Bit of history there. So anyway, the structures have been built. The railroads have been built. There's been unconfirmed rumors by low-level sources like myself and Alex Jones and people like you over these past 20 years. But now we have confirmation from the highest level source that we may ever get, Catherine Austin Fitz.
Right.
Now, a friend of mine who served with the Navy SEALs, which means he spent a lot of time on submarines, he told me this 25 years ago. He says, John, the Navy has under ocean cities. They already have them. So that's all part of the mix also.
I'm striving. I really am striving to understand how that would work. Okay. Because that's a whole different technology than just simply underground.
Well, it is. Right? And you wouldn't be subject to the earthquake, the seismic activity that you would being underground. It'd be water activity, which water can only exert so much pressure. So everybody would probably be a pretty safe place to be. I've published, I've done speaking engagements in this topic, this is kind of interesting. So it is part of the program here. It's been about 12 or so years ago, maybe 15 years ago. I got a call from the son of a friend of mine, another Vietnam vet that served in the same place in the Mekong Delta that I was, Special Forces veteran, that his dad was in the Philippines getting treatment for pancreatic cancer. And the doctors demanded a family member or somebody show up, or they're going to send him back to the States to stop the treatments. Nobody in the entire family had a passport. They knew I had one. I got the call at noon on Saturday. By noon Sunday, I was on a plane to the Philippines. Somebody, and at this level in the Philippines, and of course, there's about 5% of the people in the Philippines run the country, and they all know each other, the doctors, the bankers, the CEOs, and so forth. I got invited, and I still don't know how this happened, but I got invited to do a speaking engagement at the home of the former president of the Bank of the Philippines, their equivalent of the Federal Reserve. So we're in Manila at sea level, hot, humid place. We get in this car, we travel for better part of 2 hours going uphill, till we're about 2,000 feet above sea level at a gated community. The guards at the gate had submachine guns. They didn't mess around. They had submachine guns. So we had 40 acres of what looked like Swiss villas, 40 acres of Spanish-style haciendas, 40 acres of American ranch-style homes, 3 golf courses, 9 restaurants, and I don't know what else. A nice place. So I get to this home. You could grow up in this home of the former bank of the president of the Philippines. You would never have to go in your kitchen. Why would you do that, Doug? Go in your own kitchen? You never drive a car. Why drive a car? Why would you ever do that? I've been around wealth before, but this is wealth at a level that I never personally have been at before, even though I've been in the homes of multimillionaires. And so I did the presentation. The guests there all spoke English better than my hillbilly neighbors. And when I got the questions and answers, they said, I was asked a question, John, who's going to survive it? So I walked over to the edge of the veranda, pointed to this tropical island. I said, here's who's going to survive this. Those people on that island over there that have cast iron cook pots, machetes, and not much else. On the other hand, you folks, where I am right here on this veranda, your lifestyle depends on 2 things, electricity and electronic digits in your bank account. And they got real quiet.
That's true, though.
Oh, yeah. It is true. It is true. And that's true of the whole planet, not just that gated community in near Manila. That's true of the whole planet. And we have about half the planet, population-wise, that will never sit on a flush toilet, never live in a home with hot and cold running water, never have central heat or central air conditioning. They simply won't do it. That's half the people on this planet, more than 3 billion people. Those are the people who are more likely to survive, because if they can get to a good altitude, their lifestyle isn't going to change all that much, Doug.
Man. Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you think about this, the most likely event, I'll put it to the chat, what the chat thinks. An extinction level event to me would be like a nuclear exchange, which anyone who has heard Annie Jacobson talk about a nuclear exchange would realize that 72 minutes, basically, the world is over. Humanity's done.
I must disagree.
Okay. Feel free. Go ahead.
Okay. Every Tuesday morning, I have what's called the Tuesday Morning Roundtable. One of my guests, he's a very dear friend, he's a nuclear scientist. And he says that there's no such thing as nuclear winter. First of all, that's a fantasy. That nuclear war is very survivable. The nukes will be set off between the warring countries, which is not where most of the people live. I should say India and China, it could be warring countries, and that's half the people on the planet right there. Between the population of those 2 countries is maybe not quite half the people, maybe a third of the people on this planet would be China and India. But even there, the nukes will be focused on military targets. You're not going to waste nukes on farmland. So nuclear winter is a fantasy. It's something that we don't need to be concerned about. People that are downwind from nuclear targets, obviously they're going to be in big trouble. But I've never heard from any government source or source I would trust nuclear war referred to as extinction level event. I've never heard that at all. It's referred to in many other ways, but not as an extinction level event. Extinction level event would kill 95% of the people on this planet, and nuclear war would not do that. So when Catherine Austin Fitz, if she was talking about World War III, she would have talked about World War III, but she didn't. She talked about an extinction level event. And she's a brilliant woman, well-read, well-respected, and she used, you know, when she's speaking publicly, like with her interview with Tucker Carlson, she chooses her words very carefully. You know, if she meant World War III, she would have said World War III, but she didn't. She said extinction level event. In fact, there was a movie called ELE, I think, ELE, which is the acronym for extinction level event. I don't recall the.
So you're talking. And certainly the signs, if you watch the, I guess what would it be, geography or the things taking place, again, especially Pacific Northwest, West Coast, Ring of Fire. So what you're saying is some blow up there could very well cause the use of the shelters and a lot, just a huge loss of life. And that's what... That's where things are pointing. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Just to be clear. Okay.
Yeah, I think I may have found the film Deep Impact, 1998, with Robert Duvall and a bunch of stars, Vanessa Redgrave and so forth, Morgan Freeman. I think that's the one where they refer to ELE. ELE. Right. That's kind of a side note. That's, you know, it's a movie. It's a big so what. It may be predictive programming, though.
Exactly. Yeah, easily. I mean, yeah.
Easily. And that's been quite a while ago, 1998. I was awarded when the sponsor of the Prague Peace Prize called me in 2017, I think it was, offering to award me the Prague Peace Prize. I thought, this is really a silly thing. This can't be real. Well, it turned out it was real. And I did go to Prague, Czech Republic, and I was awarded the Prague Peace Prize based mostly on my work in my DVD, Global Warming, with the Governments and Telling You. Two DVDs set with 4 hours of information and a 25-book list of books at the end of it for people to do their own research. That trip was a good trip. I met some interesting people. I was awarded.
If you don't mind, for the people that don't know about that, can you give just a brief overview, a summary? Because some people might look at that and say, oh, John Moore believes in man-made, listen to me carefully now, man-made global warming.
Well, that's a cover story. The title of my DVD is Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. Once again, human-caused global warming is a fantasy. There is no such thing. All human activity for 1 year amounts to 1 day of energy from the sun. If you could measure human activity effect on the climate, it would be a fraction of 1%. Right. That's how tiny it is. It's right. A fantasy. But what it does, the scientists knew 30-plus years ago that there would be dramatic changes in climate, and they needed something to blame it on, plus make buckets full of money. So why not blame it on human activity and make buckets full of money? But here's a way, and unless you're caught up in the fantasy and don't want to believe reality, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, they came up with this, what amounts to a treaty for all the countries to sign, agreeing to decrease the creation of carbon dioxide, which is a great gas, a healthy, helpful, healthy
necessary
gas for the planet. Necessary gas.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that is, The two countries that produce the most carbon dioxide, China and India, did not sign the treaty. Now, you can't have it both ways. You can't have the production of CO2 be a clear and present danger to end life on Earth, while at the same time having the two largest producers of CO2 continue to make all they damn well please. The two thoughts can't exist in the same brain, but they do. And so I used to, I discontinued, but I used to carry around that report from the United Nations, about 1920 pages. I used to carry around three or four copies to give somebody who would be interested to read it. And it turned out that it didn't matter. The people who believe humans cause climate change, they don't care about reality. They don't care that over one third of the people on the planet making the most CO2 ever are not signers to this treaty. So it's like trying to convince a 3-year-old there's no Santa Claus. You know, it's not going to happen. So I was like, oh, I don't carry around copies of that treaty anymore. I used to carry around copies of the joint report from U.S. Congress authorizing President Bush to use force in Iraq. It clearly, it states that the concern of the United States Congress, Senate, and the House was nuclear weapons program. With Saddam Hussein did not have a nuclear weapons program. If he did, the video tapes of it would have been circulated all over the country once it was discovered. Well, it wasn't discovered because it didn't exist. And General Powell, who I had a lot of respect for, he's now dead because he got the COVID clot shot. He made an absolute fool of himself in front of the entire world, displaying the fake evidence of Iraq attempting to obtain yellowcake uranium, which would be used to make nuclear weapons, a complete fantasy. And he quit the Trump administration shortly after that, in case you weren't paying attention.
Right.
I meant the Bush administration, excuse me.
I knew what you meant. Boy, isn't that funny how we just kind of gloss over at times when we hear things, we understand what the other person means, but we, anyway, but I have to say this, Randy Taylor and myself, were among others that caught the, well, elements within the CIA who were active on Islamic or Arabic language, I should say, message boards. We were among some analysts or investigators who turned over information that caused that testimony. Okay. And come to find out that information was seeded by the CIA onto the message boards. Okay. So it was all, it was just a bit, I'm not saying it's because of our information. I'm saying that we caught the information that was supposedly, at least in part, used for the Iraq invasion based on the chemical weapons part.
Well, they had chemical weapons, and the warehouses that had chemical weapons, and the boxes that they were in all said made in USA, because all came from us.
Right.
And Saddam Hussein was our ally fighting against Iran, and that's where that's how we got the chemical weapons, because they were meant to be used against the Iranians. So of course he had chemical weapons. We gave them to him,
and some via France. But okay, yeah, go ahead. Yes,
they were using the pretext that Saddam attacked his own people. Well, he probably did. As third world dictators went in that part of the world, in the Muslim world, he was not the nicest guy, but he certainly wasn't the worst. In fact, Iraq under Saddam was the best place for a Christian to be. Not Israel, not Saudi Arabia, not any place else. Iraq was the best place to be a Christian. In fact, the third guy in charge in the chain of command was a Christian in Iraq. You're never going to see that in Israel, ever. It's not going to happen. Christians could freely practice Christianity. They could have churches open to anybody that wanted to walk in the door. That's not going to happen in Israel. It's right. Not going to happen. Our ally, Israel.
How many people do you think really get that? I mean, folks, for all the critics out there who just hate Israel or say that, you know, or speak against Israel, how many people really do you think, John, really understand why there should be some issues there?
We're doing a segue, but I'm okay with that. My Tuesday guest at the roundtable is Steve Bindon, former CIA asset, he's Jewish. He's real Jewish, Sephardic Jewish, as opposed to the make-believe Jews from Ukraine. The Middle East is incredibly complex, and very few Americans understand the complexity of it. I was put on alert to invade the Middle East twice when I was with the 6th Special Forces Group. I did intelligence studies on the Middle East on behalf of U.S. Army Special Forces. My specific job in the intelligence section was to maintain all the maps for Egypt, because that was our AO. If we got activated, it would be 600 of us against how many millions of screaming Arabs. That would have been a one-way ticket. We all knew that. But I had one entire wall with drawers. Use my hand. The drawers were about this. I'm gesturing about an inch and a half tall. Each drawer was inch and a half tall, 2 feet wide, and was full of maps. The entire length of the, and nobody maintained these things because nobody thought about it. These maps for I don't know how many years. So I spent several months taking a complete inventory of all these maps and ordering maps, so we had a complete supply of every map covering the entire country of Egypt. For example, when we were fighting in Iraq, we would have the president, the secretary of defense, other high-level people talking about foreign fighters coming to Iraq. You remember that, Doug? Foreign fighters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So there'd be foreign fighters from Jordan or Egypt or Saudi Arabia. And to Americans, it may make sense. Well, they're from a different country. What Americans don't know, that within living, well, back then, we still had living memory, people who were still alive in 1917, when the British split up one country and had it become many countries. It was the Ottoman Empire for 6 centuries.
Right.
And for 6 centuries, you could be born in Turkey, go to school in Egypt, marry a woman from Jordan, and live in Iraq. Just as one example of people moved freely about the Ottoman Empire for 600 years. So Iraqi, you know, people in the Middle East are scratching their heads. What's the President Bush talking about? What's the Secretary of Defense talking about? Foreign fighters, these are my cousins. If you got people going to school, marrying back and forth, traveling for 600 years, all inside one country, going from Egypt to Turkey is like going from Texas to New York. It's not a big deal. You know, same right. language, same religion, same everything, same customs, beliefs, and so forth. No passport necessary. Why would you have a passport to go from Texas to New York?
It would be
you haven't left the country.
And that's why it's so important, John, I think, for people to understand what you're talking about, because a lot of people who don't know history, and I think this is by design, don't understand the backdrop for statements like, you know, foreign fighters. Okay. Explain that. Well, and you just did, you know, the genesis of that and really kind of how deceitful.
And of course,
go ahead.
At the level of Bush and Secretary of Defense and others, they know what I'm talking about. It was no secret.
Sure.
They intentionally use that term foreign fighters to inflame passion in Americans that these are really the bad guys, since they're coming from other countries.
Yeah.
And that's all it was about, was to inflame passion and to support the war effort, which, you know, I take pity on the Americans who went there and served, with honor and distinction, serving at the request of the U.S. government. But they were not there to protect the security of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. Saddam Hussein was not our enemy.
No, and actually, at the time he was taken out, he was actually, well, I'm speaking of Gaddafi, my apologies. At the time Gaddafi was taken out, he was actually giving our intelligence service actionable intelligence on terrorists, but terrorist threats. But anyway, you're exactly right. Man, this whole continue, because I don't want to take you off.
Well, we can segue back and forth. I just confirmed that Deep Impact is the film where they use the Ellie name as a code word among high-level government officials. So I did confirm. It's a well-done movie. It's worth watching.
Let me ask you a question, since you're in kind of a shorts or kind of a changing of topics. Lately, I'm not going to mention any names. There has been a husband and wife CIA officer team, if you will, making the rounds on talk shows.
Okay.
All right. Now we also, well, I'll just put a period there. So my question to you, an ex or former, I guess the operative word there is former.
Right.
John, do you trust today any former CIA officer, not agent, but officer? Obviously, they're all officers, not agents, but officers. Do you trust what they say?
Unless I have, I'll tell you how I trust anybody and what they say. And I was taught this military intelligence school, which applies to our career too as criminal investigators. First of all, the source. Is a source a person who is a homeless person with mental problems, or is a source a owner of a company that manufactures hammers, for example, and has employees and is a normal person? So that's the first thing. The second thing is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, by the way, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest. The second is the information itself. So if the homeless, mentally ill person says, I saw a U.S. aircraft carrier docking at the port yesterday, the source would, and I know from other sources that that's a true statement. So the source would get a 1, but the information would get a 10. All right.
Okay.
And I get that. I'm using an extreme example to make the point crystal clear. If the CEO of the hammer company says, I saw a UFO in my backyard yesterday, the source would get a 10. But the information would be a 1, especially if he said I had barbecue with him, you know. So those are extreme examples. Now, when it comes to CIA employee, and I almost joined the CIA twice. The first time I was looking at becoming an intelligence analyst, as I was with the Army with the CIA in 1970. That looked pretty promising until I looked at the pay grade, a GS-5. A GS-5 in 1970 would mean sharing an apartment in Langley with 3 other guys, riding a bicycle back and forth to work, and eating peanut butter sandwiches for lunch. It would be economically desperate.
A GS-5 for a CIA officer?
No, this is an intelligence analyst. Entry level. And I also knew the following, because I already had 3 years of doing this. I'd get my very own cubicle and no computers. It'd be a telephone and a typewriter, hopefully electric, and I spend my time in the CIA library preparing reports, interviewing people that I knew, because I already done it for 3 years with the Army. I knew that my excellent work that was well done and accurate would be ignored, just like it was before the Tet Offensive, ignored. So I looked at that in 1970 and thought, well, they're going to pay me less money than I made as a construction worker fresh out of high school. I'm going to do excellent work, and they're going to ignore it. So I didn't do that.
No. Thank you.
The second time
for
was,
a lot of reasons. Go ahead.
Second time was 9 years later. I was back in the reserves, Army Reserves, back in Special Forces. I talked to the guys because in 1979 we had about six embassies violently taken over, all one after the other. And I thought maybe I should help out the country and go into the CIA. My buddies in Special Forces said, this is almost a direct quote, "John, you don't want to do that. They eat their own." And, oh, okay, thank you. I won't do that.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, a lot of people recall only the Iranian embassy, not the other foreign embassies. I think South America. Well, you get the point.
It was a bunch. It was five or six. Yeah. It's a matter of 5 or 6 months. It was like the embassy of the month being taken over violently.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, and, it was horrible.
And people think we're on the cusp now, okay? You got to go back and think about the taking of the embassy in Tehran. I mean, there are so many events over, really, in your lifetime, John, my lifetime, that people either don't know, have forgotten, or, hey, the Liberty, you know, the USS Liberty. I mean, many volatile events. Go ahead.
I was in military intelligence school when the USS Liberty was attacked in June 1967. You want a little humor?
Sure.
Okay. Why does the U.S. State Department use Marines for embassy guards and not Green Berets?
I'm afraid to say why. Why, John?
Because the Marines will follow orders. You order a Green Beret not to have ammunition. See how far that goes.
Yeah. And, you know, boy, I'll tell you, how true is that? Folks, think
well,
about
when
that.
When the barracks in Lebanon were blown up, the Marines had weapons but no ammunition.
Yeah, how many did we lose in that? Almost 300? 300?
It was a bunch. And only a month before, a Navy SEAL had done a security survey and told him, guys, this won't work. And,
yeah,
of course, he was ignored.
Boy, how many failures? Or were they really failures, or were they?
There's no excuse. We do these things to be polite. Well, you can't be polite in the Middle East. Be polite in terms of extending a greetings, hello, how are you? But when it comes to Marines guarding a military installation, you have to be armed with deadly force. And hopefully they will be in the future, and that changed some things.
You know, something we haven't talked recently, and by the way, folks, I want to apologize to John Moore publicly. Boy, I'll tell you what, you talk about certain events that happen at times, at the wrong times. Folks, you recall, I think one day we had, we didn't have a show, and it was like the last minute, and people were saying, what the hell? What's wrong with you guys? Well, that was something that we had to take. I mean, it was something that was we had very little control over. So a couple of times, John was like, I mean, he was ready to go. And don't forget, folks, John wakes up at like 3:45 in the morning, his time, central time, to get ready for a show. And which everyone should be listening to because it's a great informative show. His website, theliberatedman.com. But I want to apologize to him because like twice in a row, we were like no shows or, hey, sorry, John, we're not going to be here. Okay. So I want to apologize to you, John, because I know it doing the show or not doing the show when you're scheduled, you have a big commitment, and I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for being here, and I want to apologize.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Doug. It's a outreach. It's become my job, really, being reaching out to people and getting information. The team that did Texas security at the Lebanon barracks was led by Dick Marchenko, the SEAL Team 6 Red Team. Yeah. A very, very dear friend of mine did 6 tours in the Mekong Delta with SEAL Team 6.
Man.
He's a warrior. He's a real warrior. And he was in my high school class. Great guy. Great family man. One of his sons was murdered. And I was...
Really?
I did an investigation on that. I won't get into details, but he had a son who was murdered. And yeah, these are the real deal. The SEAL Team 6 is the real deal. And what Marchenko did in at military bases all over the world was show the base commander how easy it was to penetrate their security. For example, one thing that they would do would have a guy put on a running outfit and running shoes and just run through the main gate at 7 o'clock in the morning, saying hi on the way in.
And that's the thing, John. How many times you and I, as investigators, were in places where we shouldn't have been only because we acted like we belonged there? Okay.
Well, something. The detective agency I worked with, I wasn't part of this. I would love to have been. We got hired by a Fortune 500 company in St. Louis. I won't mention the company, to test their security. We got a van. We had a stack of cardboard boxes, a delivery uniform, and a two-wheel dolly. And we wheeled the two-wheel dolly with a stack of 5 cardboard cartons right into the CO's office.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was hired by a Fortune 500 company to there was a case of one employee providing intellectual property to another company, a competing company.
Right.
And the client was losing, I mean, tens of thousands of dollars a week. So I was hired, and I went to a company picnic, and actually went into this security. It was held at the facility. I can't say too much because I'm still under an NDA. But anyway, long story short, somebody caught me in the office. I mean, I was like dead to rights, caught where I shouldn't have been, where right. Nobody should have been.
Right.
So I don't know how many people ever saw Beverly Hills. I think it was Beverly Hills Cop, where Eddie Murphy.
Right. There was a whole series of those movies.
Yeah. Where I think he was caught or something. And anyway, he said, you know, I'm an inspector for the customs or something like that. And right. he talked his way out of that. And, right. and that's what I did. And I thought, wow.
Well, good for you.
How close. But see, you, I mean, so we've been there and done that. And that's only. Are the red cell, I guess getting back on topic, the red cells, are they still doing that?
I don't know. They pissed off a lot of flag rank officers.
Okay. I can see that.
Yep. And I, quite frankly, I don't know.
Because Brad Thor, I don't know how many people, or John, if you remember Brad Thor or know Brad Thor, the author. I've talked to him many times, and I've got his books. He sent his books to me, but he was part of the Red Cell team. He would tell me, or a Red Cell team, tell me stories about infiltration and how far they were able to get, right. How lax the security is in the U.S. And that's, folks, you need to know that. I mean,
I think they were disbanded in 1986, I believe.
Okay. All right.
Wow. Yeah, and they were controversial as well. They should be because you know the military wants to be proud of their security, and Red Cell made them look like idiots, quite frankly. Right. Well, moving on from there. Getting back to the ELLI, extinction level event, the question comes up all the time, and I've been doing this more than 20 years than I expected to hear it. John, when's it going to happen? Well, about 7 or 8 years ago, I started jokingly saying 3 p.m. tomorrow. But upon further reflection, I've looked at the people who asked that question. Who does answer that question? Who does not ask that question? The people who ask that question are the people who are not prepared. They're not living on a hobby farm 100 miles from a major city. They're simply not ready. They're people that are living in a urban, suburban area with a comfortable lifestyle, a good employment, and they believe that once they get a date from John Moore or from some other source, then they'll quit their beautiful job in an urban suburban area, then they'll start the hobby farm, and then they'll be okay. Well, that's a prescription for disaster.
Yes, sir.
It is. Yeah.
And about that, I just want to interject one thing to those people listening. And look, I'm in the same boat. Okay. I really would like to be able to have like a man. I'd love to live where John lives, okay, in that area, and have the land and do what he does, because he is really prepared, better prepared than most. But I find myself in a position like all of you or most of you. You know what? We're here. We're in between. We got neighbors on both sides. The point I'm trying to make is be prepared to the extent you can be at your station in life. And you know, if you are not as prepared as you should be, John, and correct me if you think this is not right, but if you're not at the level you should be or want to be, then just ask God for guidance and trust in God as well, right? I mean, but strive to be where you want to be. While you are both trusting and praying, you have to, you know, it's got to be an active process. Is that my cover?
Well, that makes sense. There are cities that are going to survive this, like Atlanta will be the new eastern capital of the United States. Denver will be the new western capital because of the infrastructure they've got and their altitude above sea level. The country will be split east-west at Mississippi River. My friend Command Sergeant Major Dan Page, there's some interviews with him on my website. When he was still active duty Army, he was at a briefing where they were told that U.S. NORTHCOM, the most recent U.S. command, United States Northern Command, would be split east-west of the Mississippi River. All the men, all the equipment, all the supplies split east-west of the Mississippi River. They weren't told why, but I already told Command Sergeant Major Page why. So he's sitting there smiling to himself, knowing why. And, of course, this took place about 10 or 12 years ago, where they split U.S. NORTHCOM east-west at the Mississippi River for the following reason. Mississippi River, once these violent earth changes kicks in, will be at least 100 miles wide and a couple hundred feet deep. We don't have bridges across a body of water like that. You simply don't. Everything has to be transported by a ship or barge. And that's expensive. It's time-consuming. And they're not going to do it, not to any great extent anyway. So that's why the country, why they split U.S. NORTHCOM, everything east-west at the Mississippi River. And as I mentioned in passing a moment ago, Denver will be the new and the major U.S. capital, West Mississippi. Atlanta will be the capital, East Mississippi, and will be slightly under the chain of command of the Western capital in Denver.
The Atlanta thing kind of makes me happy. I mean, God bless you, Confederates. Good boy. But why Denver?
Mainly the infrastructure they have there in altitude above sea level. It's 5,000 feet above sea level. It's been quite a few years since they were decided to build a new Denver airport. There were six communities that wanted the airport for obvious economic reasons. And there was a film done called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Massive, I think almost every adult in this country has seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the aliens meet the human beings. And the film has the aliens meeting the human beings at Devil's Tower out west, and they give the exact latitude and longitude of the place where the human beings are going to meet the aliens. But it's not Devil's Tower. It's one of the six communities that's going to get the new Denver airport.
Okay.
Now, is that synchronicity?
They didn't know
which community was going to get it when they made the movie. So they picked one of the six as a likely spot for where the aliens are going to meet the human beings. And they gave the exact latitude and longitude of that location. And it's in the movie.
Anybody earlier, you were saying something about predictive programming. Just saying, you know, hey, I'm going to go watch The Simpsons now.
Well, let's segue here. There's a group of people. They are Christians, but they keep all the Jewish holidays. And they invited me to Springfield for a presentation. They had a hotel meeting room. And so I'm doing a three-hour presentation with 2 15-minute breaks. And I get to the part where I'm talking about the Black Knight satellite. which is, we believe, about 12,000 years old. It took me a while to find out the third dimension, but it's 20 by 40 by 70 feet.
Well, I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm sorry, okay, buddy.
Hardly anybody did until Pepsi-Cola did a worldwide presentation on it about 6 or 8 years ago in January. It's still on YouTube, by the way. As if the Black Knight Sailor was going to unite humanity. Kumbaya, all that mess. I first heard about the Black Knight satellite. It's been 20-something years ago. Very little was published about it back then. But I'm talking about the Black Knight satellite. And I see a gentleman on stage left, front row. He's got a notebook. He's nodding and making notes, nodding and making notes. So the next break, I introduce myself and I say, "What agency are you with?" He says, "John, I'm not with an agency. I'm in the satellite industry." What you're talking about is common knowledge in the satellite industry. There's literally dozens of satellites circling Earth right now that we modern Earthbound human beings did not put up there, including the Black Knight satellite, which you mentioned was 12,000 years old. But the majority of satellites that Earthbound human beings did not put there were put there since World War II. Dozens of satellites circling Earth right now that Earthbound human beings did not put there. And he says, "John, within the satellite industry, within NASA and other government agencies that need to know, it's common knowledge that these satellites are circling Earth right now." The Black Knight satellite, by the way, is on a polar orbit, not an equatorial orbit. And that's a whole story in and of itself. We can get into it if you want.
Yeah, supposedly now, I guess I was a little bit disingenuous, but the Black Knight satellite has been for years now labeled a fever dream, a conspiracy theory. however, and the satellite itself is, as John Moore said, by the way, thelibertyman.com, but as John Moore said, in a geosynchronous polar orbit. And there has, people say, well, there's no substantiation for this. You know, the satellite is some, I don't know, 10,000 years old or whatever. But supposedly, it was captured, I think, well, I don't know if it was just visually seen or captured on film during.
Let me tell you how this happened.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The first modern satellite that went up was a Sputnik, about the size of a volleyball.
Right.
And that was, I think, I'll look it up real quick, but in the mid-1950s. It would help to have the exact year. It was during the Eisenhower administration.
I'll look it up for you while you're talking here.
Okay. So let's imagine you're a 30-year-old Air Force captain. You got the overnight watch in the Situation Room at the White House. Your boss is asleep upstairs, five-star general, General Eisenhower, and you get a flash memo.
By the way, not to interrupt you, Sputnik was launched on October 4, 1957, as part of the Soviet.
Okay, 57, yes. Got it. So it's 1957, your boss is upstairs asleep, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. You got this flash from the Air Force that they have detected a satellite on a polar orbit, which we couldn't do for more than 10 years in the future, by the way. You got a decision. Do I wake up my boss, the five-star general, President Eisenhower, or do I let him sleep and then you wake him up? That's how important this was. Obviously, and here's what happened. In 1957, before 1957, they never had optical and radar tracking stations to track satellites. Why would they do that? There were no satellites, as far as they knew. So right. They set up, because these new satellites, they set up optical and radar tracking stations all over the planet to track these brand new things that were just up in the air, the satellites. So that's how they detected the Black Knight satellite for the first time.
Really?
So they wake up President Eisenhower, almost said Nixon, and obviously that morning there was a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and scientists and all these mucky mucks, and it instantly became a matter of highest national priority to gain access to this object just below the Van Allen radiation belt. That's 20 by 40 by 70 feet to get access to the object and gain access to the technology. Now, the circles I move in, and probably the circles you move in, have men and women that go in unusual places that normal people can only see in movies. One friend of mine has access without an escort to the NSA, SCI. He's an outside vendor, FBI. In fact, he can land his plane at Langley wherever he needs to. One source. Another source, I was a house guest of one of my listeners in Atlanta, Georgia. He was personal friends with a U.S. senator at the time. And I said, talk to your senator buddy. They were friends for 20 years before this guy was ever a senator. Talk to your senator buddy. Ask him about the Black Knight satellite. So he did. He got back with me a couple weeks later. And I said, well, how did the conversation go? He said, I asked the senator about the to tell me what he knew about the Black Knight satellite. Here's what the senator replied. Tell me what you know first.
Yeah. Typical for conspiracy or fever dream, right? Yeah.
Well, no, not quite. That's how a conversation about classified information go.
And, true.
So my friend told the senator what he knew, and the senator said, even with my level of even with my security clearance, I still don't know if we've gained access to the inside of that Black Knight satellite. I still don't know. That's how classified it is, where a U.S. senator, even he, you know, senators have a pretty high level of security clearance. Even he didn't know. So here's my, and here's what I believe happened. First of all, the Apollo space missions were a complete fantasy to get the technology and the money to be spent to get 12,000 miles above the surface of the Earth to gain access to the Black Knight satellite. So you go up there, Doug, you get close enough to it, and what I've also been told, in general, these alien satellites have a defense mechanism, which is electromagnetic signal that gets stronger the closer you get to it, strong enough to the point where it can hurt or even kill human beings. So that's another topic in itself. I don't know if there would be countermeasures you could use against electromagnetic signal or not. I simply don't know. But the
dress up like a Faraday bag. I don't know.
Yeah,
put a Faraday bag over your head.
Possibly. But regardless, you would get close enough to measure and photograph the docking mechanism, go back to Earth, fabricate a docking mechanism, go back up there, get the door open. Who's going to be the first guy through the door? It has another nickname, by the way. The other nickname is the cryogenic box. Now, that brings up another whole list.
That I didn't know.
Well, that's why I make the big bucks. I know some stuff.
I guess so.
Now, for those who don't know, cryogenics is the use and study of absolute zero, which is, I believe, 400-something degrees below zero Fahrenheit. At absolute zero, almost all molecular activity stops. It's frozen in time. Any metal that's been subjected to absolute zero behaves differently thereafter once it goes back to normal temperatures. This is one example. And there's companies that will do cryogenic treating of metals for people that want to pay for it, for example. It's just kind of a side note. So, quite frankly, I don't know. I think it's highly likely they did get access to the contents of the Black Knight satellite, and it was obviously a race between Russia and us. China couldn't do that back then, to gain access to the Black Knight satellite and gain access to that technology. We still can't put one object that big in space. We have to bring up smaller versions, like with a space shuttle, which could hold a small school bus. It's got a big cargo space. If you bolt together one object that would be that big, 20 by 40 by 70 feet, that's huge.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Wow.
So it's common knowledge that we're being monitored by alien technology. Satellites can do two things. They can intercept radio and TV signals, and they can take photographs. That's the two main things they can do. So this has been going on, especially since World War II. If I could put myself in the shoes of the aliens, I was, after the atomic weapons were set off in 1945, I would say, oh my God, these barefoot peasants have split the atom. We need to pay attention.
Yeah. Now, I'm of the mindset, and I don't know what the listening audience, where they stand, but I'm of the mindset that when we speak about aliens, non-earthly entities, we're not necessarily talking about little green men, but interdimensional beings. Is that your belief? I mean,
I think there's probably different races, including including what we regard as humans, within that population of aliens. I don't want to go too deep into that, but that's my belief based on what I've read and what I've seen. The ones that look like us are Nordic, by the way, tall, Caucasian, blonde. They probably did, and this is another segue, they probably did interact with the Third Reich before the Second World War, during, and very likely after. We have mutual friend Steve Quayle. I highly recommend Steve Quayle's book, Empire Beneath the Ice.
Oh, yeah.
Have you read the book by any chance yourself?
Absolutely. And there's, John and folks, there's so much, really right now, there's so much verification, so much that has been verified about the Nazis and the occult, including what you're talking about, and that includes the quote alien race, and spiritual occult practices merging with that. Go ahead, sir. Continue.
Well, the first half of Empire Beneath the Ice is historical fact that we have a strong historical evidence actually took place in the Antarctic involving the Germans. The second half of the book is educated speculation based on the historical evidence we've got. The segue is basically when Admiral Richard Byrd went there about 2 years after the end of World War II, about 1947, I believe, Operation High Jump, a scientific expedition. Why would you take Navy destroyers on a scientific expedition, Doug? Why would you do that? You know, these are warships. You would take maybe one aircraft carrier if you wanted that capability, plus a bunch of cargo ships. That'd be about it, not warships.
Right.
He came back with planes being shot down, dead guys, we don't know how many dead, injured guys, a bloody nose, basically. They got the stuff beat out of them by the Germans in the Antarctic. The job they had, the mission was to get the Germans to surrender. But the Germans had technology that simply didn't exist anywhere else on the planet, including what we call flying saucers. Splitting the atom to make a bomb is pretty high tech. Taking enriched uranium and heating up water to make steam is fairly low tech. So we know the Germans had enriched uranium. They more than likely had the ability to make steam with it. If you got the ability to make steam in the Antarctic, you could probably have a pretty comfortable life, don't you think?
I would think so, yeah.
Absolutely. Of course you could.
Which, okay, there is so much, I mean, explain to me why. What was it? Kerry went to the Antarctic. Others have gone there.
The Secretary of State John Kerry went to the Antarctic on Election Day 2016. And
why?
We're not done that with that part.
Okay.
Within 90 days, we had President Putin, we had the Pope, and the head of the Eastern Orthodox Church all there. Plus, we don't know. Now, these guys are important enough that there's a press release when they go someplace. Most people aren't that important. But as the old saying goes, Mohammed goes to the mountain. The mountain doesn't come to Mohammed. So these guys were ordered to go there. They weren't there to look at penguins or ice core samples. They were there because they were told to be there. They were ordered. You know, what level of power does it take to order the Pope to go anyplace, or President Putin to go anyplace, or the head of the Eastern Orthodox Church to go anyplace. Who has that power? I'm not aware of any entity that has that power that I'm aware of. I can guess who it was, but that's pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
I mean,
here's what they were told.
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
Here's what they told. You service people that don't live down here where we are, we don't care, we being the people in charge, we don't care what you do, what you don't do. You can have wars, you can have great economies, you can have failed economies, you can kill all the people you want, just don't use nukes. You can do anything you want, but use nukes. I think that's what the order they were given. And that's my belief.
How would that apply to the Pope? If that was a message.
Well, the Pope has a lot of power that he can exercise throughout much of the world to influence world leaders. And that's why he would be there, because he is a recognized world leader with a lot of influence over governments worldwide. So that's my belief why he would be there. Okay. And we don't know how many others were there. Was the president of China there, North Korea, the NATO countries? I simply don't know who was there. But that's where those four men were definitely there within 90 days of each other in 2016 and early 2017.
Very interesting. It's the timing as well. And I question everything from, I want to know, obviously, the who, what, when, where, why, how, whatever. But I also, the why to me is extremely important, especially with the timing of things. For instance, now I'm going to say this, and John, I know this is completely off topic, but maybe not. More and more, I'll ask you this. Have you been hearing people talk about us living in a simulation, if you will? I'm trying to describe this as best as I know how, that everything around us is almost holographic. We're living in a simulation, and that veil is breaking. Go ahead.
Okay. There was a meeting of Elon Musk and people that are at the highest level of computer technology, six or eight guys, maybe 10, doesn't matter, a private meeting. And what I've read about it is that they concluded that the entire planet is a computer simulation. And it's easily provable that everything on this planet is natural, is mathematically perfect. And that can't happen by chance. It simply can't. Everything is mathematically perfect that is in nature. Animals and plants and so forth are mathematically perfect. And they most likely reached that conclusion by the mathematics that could not possibly be by chance. So that's a quick summary of the meeting of those men, Doug.
Okay. All right. Wow. Interesting to be sure. Folks are listening to John Moore, thelibertyman.com. TheLibertyMan.com is his website. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com. And folks, if you haven't done so already, bookmark his website and definitely listen to his program. It's an eye-opener, but it's necessary. It's an information download, like I like to say. But he's got just an array of incredible guests on with him as well. TheLibertyMan.com, John Moore is my guest. John, talking about a lot of interesting things. My goodness. Where else do you want to go? We were talking right before the show about things that are happening under RFK at the...
RFK I'm a big fan. In fact, I donated to his campaign when he's running for president, which I rarely do such a thing.
Wow.
Bobby Cannon Jr., first of all, he's not a scientist. He's a lawyer. He's a very brilliant lawyer, in my opinion. And he's very careful. He chooses. In fact, I'm reading his book about the real Anthony Fauci, by the way, which is a scary book you don't want to read before you go to sleep.
Fabulous book, yeah. Though. Yeah.
He chooses words very carefully. And he'll say something when it comes to vaccines. I support safe and effective vaccines. But when you read about what he says publicly, he never, ever mentions a single safe and effective vaccine. So he's brilliant in being able to say that, because what we're going to be finding out, in fact, this month, September, he has a team working on the reason that there's this scary dramatic increase in autism, where it's 1 in 32 children, unless you're talking about black boys, which is 1 in 12, which is basically the destruction of our society. Once you reach a certain level of something that makes you non-functional, we're not at 5%, but what would 1 in 32 be about 1 in 3, about 3% of the population. It's scary. And, of course, the reason is easy to find. Going to one of my favorite groups of people, the Amish, the only children in the Amish community that have autism are adopted children who have been vaccinated.
And I can verify that based on the contacts I've had. We're not too far from one Amish community. And to give you an example of kind of what John's talking about with safe and effective, I would also add, necessary, I suppose. Consider this. If within the last, I think, 30 years, if you have had a child born within hours, for example, that child will, being born, that child will receive a hepatitis B vaccination. And there's only two ways to get hepatitis B, and that's by IV drug use or by sexual contact.
There's a third way. Transfusion of blood from somebody who had hepatitis B.
Has there been, has that been verified?
I had a neighbor, in fact, the closest home to me. She got hepatitis.
Yeah.
The entire blood supply has been contaminated, quite frankly, because they still allow people that got the COVID clot shot to give blood. But that's another way you can get it. And she was a nice lady. She was our postmistress, and it wrecked her. She's still alive, but it's wrecked her life.
Sure it has. Yeah. I guess my point is, there are so many things right now that we as parents or grandparents, or especially the new parents, can say, no, thank you. No, not on my child. We can exercise that right. We don't have to just roll over and play dead and accept what the doctor or nurse at the hospital says. Can we not, John? I mean, I know that's a little bit off topic, but we can exert our own force and say, you know what? No, you're not going to give my child this shot or that
here's
shot.
Here's how bad, and this goes back, the youngster I'm thinking about, he's now 26 years old.
Yep.
The parents are friends of mine. So they want to get the child out of the hospital without a vaccination. They were told they could not take the child out of the hospital. They were not allowed to unless the child was vaccinated. So they waited till the shift changed, and as they're walking out the door, they said, oh, we got the vaccination on the last shift, and they walked out the door without the vaccination. They'll literally attempt to hold you prisoner if you refuse the vaccination for the newborn child.
Or what was going to be my comment, because
they can't, how they hold somebody against their will, I don't know, but they were certainly willing to do so.
Okay. Which is ridiculous. What I see RFK Jr. doing right now is, and he's doing this very masterfully, and that is, it's changing things that were once considered unchangeable. And I see him doing that step by step. And but you see that guy from the CDC, that satanic-esque, I don't even know what it was or is, who got fired. I mean, who got let go. My goodness. We have these people in government. Go ahead, John. I'm just rambling.
People like that gravitate towards government jobs because it's almost impossible to get fired. If you show up every day and don't make any trouble, they can't fire you. We got a note here on the chat about Mississippi has declared a crisis due to so many babies being miscarried. A lot of hospitals have shut down the part of the hospital where babies are being born because of so few babies being born due to COVID clot shots. We've changed the very nature of our society and our country with these COVID clot shots, Doug.
And I think I really believe I saw a social media post. I did not dig into this. I made a note too, and I just haven't had the time, but the calcification or the impairment of the pineal gland by these injections was also discovered. There was a discovery that, hey, this affects the pineal gland. This affects the God particle as well. This affects a lot of things. Some, I believe, obviously were intentional. But I think some were like bonus things that happened, at least in their eyes. But I digress. Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. Well, okay. I've interviewed the employees at all the nursing homes in my county, confirmed that there's not quite a doubling of dead people beginning the spring of 2021. One of my associates, he's a deputy sheriff in Mississippi. He's done the same thing in his county. Not quite doubling of funerals beginning in spring of 2021, which is happening all over the country. We've had insurance executives give us the same information that we've had almost a doubling of people dying in this country beginning around March of 2021 when the vaccines were introduced, the COVID vaccinations. There's no precedence for this, Doug. The Spanish flu in 1918, the various wars we've had, including the Civil War, there's never been this dramatic increase in people dying in this country ever. And there's no mainstream news attention to it, and almost no alternative media like ourselves attention to it. Something this big, this important, I think should get deserve some coverage, where the amount of people dying in this country is almost double. It's kind of a big deal, don't you think?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah. the excess death factor was addressed publicly by RFK Jr. in a recent interview he did, and I'm looking right now to try to find it, and forgive me, I can't put my finger on it, but
that's okay.
It's backing up exactly what you're saying. So yeah,
I mean, well, I got a belief, once again, it's based on my knowledge of human beings and what President Trump wants to accomplish. Now, President Trump has recently cast dispersion, cast bad doubts on the COVID vaccinations. He's never done that before. I believe he's holding back for the following reason. He doesn't want to have civil disorder, including men and women taking the law into their own hands, attacking and murdering the doctors, the clinics, the hospitals that recommended their spouse who's dead, their child who's dead, their siblings and parents who are dead because of the COVID vaccination, which they would be justified in their own minds for taking the law into their own hands, because they know that that nurse at that clinic killed their spouse. That nurse at that clinic killed their child with the COVID vaccination. And President Trump going public with his knowledge, he has to be briefed by now of the fact that these vaccinations are meant to kill and hurt. They're not. It's not a side effect. It's the intended effect of the vaccinations, the COVID right. vaccinations, to kill and hurt people. And that's according to Dr. Mike Yaden, who was a vice president at Pfizer, a former director of medical research at Pfizer. You're not going to find a more credible source for that information than Dr. Mike Yaden, who says, yes, all the COVID vaccinations were meant to kill and hurt people. It's not a side effect. It's the direct intended effect.
But as you said at one of our conversations, this is a long-term process, because obviously if it was a shorter-term process, it would become more evident and there would be an immediate obvious signs of the true purpose. So depopulation, eugenics, depopulation, that's the intended outcome.
It is. And in addition to the deaths and injuries, we got young men and women of childbearing age being sterilized.
Right.
So they can't have children. It is absolutely demonic. And this is part of it. It's a spiritual battle. There's no doubt about that. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Birx, also called scarf flooding, various high-level officials in the CDC, NIH, FDA, they're all complicit. Executives at Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. I do private consultations, Doug. I had two clients that came in from the East Coast to consult with me. They're both doctors. They said one of their patients told them, a patient that works for one of the three vaccine manufacturers, that her company had worked on a COVID vaccination for 6 years before it was released, not 9 months, 6 years. Was it experimental? No. Any vaccine has been worked on for 6 years. You know exactly what it's going to do. You're not guessing. It's not experimental. So what we're looking at is a demonic conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy to murder tens of millions of Americans, make them sterile, make them unable to function properly in humanity if they do live, in society if they do live. And this will go on for decades in the future, Doug. It's not a temporary thing. This will go on for decades in the future.
And I'll tell you what. The people that I see on social media who accuse people on the right of being in a cult, I have never seen so much intentional, what would you call it? Not just promotion, but it's almost like it's almost like they're absolutely brainwashed. And I think to a legitimate extent, they are. That, I mean, for someone to say to another family member, whether it be daughter to parents or son to parents to children, if you didn't get the shot or shots, then we're done. We're done with you. You can't come visit. Even today.
Right.
The damage that has been done. I find it staggering. And not just in the obvious, but things like that. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, at my website, at thelibertyman.com, it's laid out in panels three across. Scroll down far enough, you'll see a box in red letters. It says, John's warning about COVID vaccines, May 7th, 2020. 8 minutes. In 8 minutes, I'm with Dr. Horowitz. Brilliant man, by the way. He's my regular Thursday guest. I make two statements that Dr. Horowitz backed up. First of all, there's never been, and there will be, a safe and effective vaccine developed and released in 9 months or less. He agreed with that. My second statement, based on my knowledge of what I had at the time, my belief, no evidence at the time, but we now have evidence, that the vaccines were already in refrigerators waiting to be released, which they were. We know that now.
Right.
We didn't know that on May 7th, 2020. That's proven to be true. I don't know how many people paid heed to that warning. Hopefully thousands did. I don't know. I have worldwide outreach with my show I do every day. And Dr. Horowitz and I have been doing this every Thursday for 6 years now, warning people to not get the vaccinations. And hopefully we saved a bunch of lives. I don't know, Doug, but I hope and pray that we have.
I do suspect you have. Of course, Dr. Horowitz, I'm very familiar with his work. And I think that that's where we're at right now. I think we have to embrace people in the message of people like of Dr. Horowitz and like him, like John Moore. And we have to do the best we can. I don't think, John, do you think that we can, at this point, change minds of people? I'm to the point where I don't think, this is just me, if, at least on the subject of the clot shots, I don't see anything right now.
Well, one of my guests, Dr. Scott Huff, he's a chiropractor, he's my chiropractor. I ask him, not every show, but frequently, Doctor, how many of your COVID vaccine patients are now expressing regret, and it's still not 100%. The best numbers I've seen is 81% of men, women, boys, and girls in this country got the COVID vaccination. I was hoping it would be less than 50%, but the best numbers I've seen are 81%. That's very disappointing. And, of course, we had Vice President Vance get it. We had...
I forgot about that.
Yeah, Mark Levin get it, a brilliant man, but he got it. And right down the road from me, she's a grandmother, high school dropout, who didn't get it. It's not a matter of education or degrees or books you published. It's a matter of trusting or not trusting the government. That's what it comes down to.
Well, when the government has to bribe you to do something, whether it is with a free donut or a free hamburger or threaten you, then it's not for your benefit. I mean, of course, how can you? Which brings me to a larger point right now. As a military man, I want to ask you your opinion. This is totally off topic, but I've got to ask you about this. We're seeing some great, very positive changes coming from the military being deployed in the streets of Washington, D.C., which I am, look, I love the outcome. How do you feel about the deployment part? Okay, which now I know it's lawful under the Constitution, even under the Posse Comitatus Act, it is lawful because it does fall into a certain category that allows them to be deployed. But overall, how do you feel about it, John?
Well, my preference, and there's not enough of these guys, is that they be MPs because they've got specific training to deal with crowd control and violent and criminals. Right. Where most men and women in the military have no training like that whatsoever. I think the majority of these troops are being used to supplement and support the police instead of doing policing entirely on their own. I don't know exactly what's going on in D.C., but just the physical presence of a uniformed man or woman with a firearm is enough to deter crime all by itself. The person has to be some kind of psycho to challenge a uniformed military man or a woman who's got communications and a weapon. That'd be
we got plenty of psychos, you know, roaming the streets. But yeah,
we do. It's so far it's worked out really good. I hope that continues. On a basis in Vietnam, we would typically lose, unless it was a Tet offensive, lose about 12 guys a day. Typically, and that's a routine day of people dying in the city of Chicago. So the city of Chicago is easily as dangerous as Vietnam was on a normal day, if you just go by the numbers of people that die. As long as the troops are respected and they're having a good outcome, I'm all in favor of it. The chance of something going sideways, of course, it exists. The more they're deployed, the more violent gangs they deal with. Some of these gangs in the big cities are pretty heavily armed, and it'd be foolish for them to take on the military. Absolutely foolish, but you never know what's going to happen, Doug.
No, that's true. And I've got information where Chicago will, I'm not going to say next, but will in fact have this assistance by federal troops at some point here before the end of the summer. That's what I've heard from a pretty reliable source. So I'll just say that, as well as other places. Anything more militarily that you want to speak of? Because folks, John is very well versed in affairs, military affairs and such, and I respect him for that. But is there anything that just go wherever you like?
Yeah. Almost everybody in the military, except people who've come in the last year or since January, have got the clot shot, right. Which has been very detrimental to the readiness of the military, including all military pilots, by the way. It costs $1 million to train a man or woman to be a pilot in the military, $1 million plus. And they're all at risk of heart issues and other issues that come up with the COVID clot shot. And we're already seeing that, our reduction in our readiness because of the clot shot in every branch. That's an unfortunate fact of life. Mandatory clot shots have been stopped, thank goodness. But in the meantime, we've got all these men and women worldwide that have got the clot shot and are being affected adversely with all the things we already talked about. That's a really unfortunate thing, but it'll take years to at least, I would say, 3 to 10 years before we have new people trained to take the place of the ones who are being hurt and disabled by the clot shot.
Man, I don't even know what to say, my friend. I really don't. In terms of the damage caused by all of this, and I do hope, I really hope, President Trump. I saw Peter Navarro speaking somewhat on President Trump's behalf about that whole issue. I don't know how many people saw that interview where Peter Navarro came out and said, look, you know, Fauci lied. Everyone lied to President Trump and continued lying to him.
Right.
Even through present day at various levels, you know,
right.
So, I'm thinking, you know, how, I don't want to say gullible because he's anything but gullible, but how not? I mean, he had not, obviously he wasn't paying attention, or at the very, I guess that's
President Trump trusted people he should not have.
Right.
Look at the credentials of Anthony Fauci. He was the highest paid person in the federal government, paid about $100,000 or more than the president was. Yes. Highly respected in every area that mattered, and of course, why would you not trust him unless you knew his history of what he'd done in the past, which wasn't really all that public? But he trusted the wrong people, and that's very clear to me.
You know, well, I'll ask you: do you think, with all of these exposures, these exposing the people behind a lot of this, the funding, I mean, because we funded that whole process that led to the pandemic, if that's scandemic or whatever, but do you think anyone will actually see justice, be brought to justice, accountability, jail, whatever?
If people at that level thought they were at risk of being indicted, they got the money to go to a country with no way to be brought back to this country.
And there are 9 of those, by the way, in case you're wondering. But okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they'll do, because that's just human nature. You want, and they know the evidence is very strong, and it would be convicted before a free and fair jury. So a country, 9 countries with no extradition. Is Chile still on the list, by the way? You know,
I don't remember. I know Vietnam, okay. China, for 2. I don't remember the others, but yeah.
Well, I know that's kind of a side note. So if it gets close to where these high level people that are incredibly wealthy think they would be indicted, they're gonna get the hell out of Dodge and go to a country with no extradition and live a very comfortable and safe life.
Yeah, I can see that. And that's the thing. At some point, given RFK Jr.'s trajectory, and ladies and gentlemen, think about this. The more that comes out, the more that is officially verified, the more demands there will be for this accountability and justice. John, I have a feeling if the system is not working, then we must work the system, or we will eventually work the system.
Well, I got a map here of countries with no extradition in the United States. It's most of Africa, Saudi Arabia, Russia, China. It looks like Indonesia, if I'm not mistaken, Madagascar. It's a bunch.
So it's more than 9?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. Okay. My bad then. Okay. I thought there was only nine. Okay.
Yep. So they got their choice of some places that most countries will have a nice area you can live in if you got the money. So,
marvelous.
You know. Yeah. How much time we got left, Doug?
We've got, actually, let's see here, about 20 minutes left. I should add this again, since you're a military man, and ladies and gentlemen, have you seen the footage of the there was a small boat coming up from Venezuela?
Oh yeah,
did you see that, folks? I'm gonna send this to you.
It had four really big outboard motors on it. It was an open boat, about 25-30 feet long or so, and.
Yeah.
I don't know what they hit it with, whether it was an artillery or a rocket, but they just blew it
oh,
up.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, and think about this. There were 11 narco terrorists on this boat. Man, it was taken right out of the water. It's a kind of a feel, in a sense, a feel good video. I say that, and I look, I understand loss of life and all that, but I just want, look, we need to treat this as if we're in a war, because we are in a war. These narco terrorists, cartel members, are bringing in drugs intentionally. It is a weapon of war. Hey, that's a weapon of mass destruction. So we need to handle this as such. Think back to the opium wars. But again, that's a different subject altogether. But Eric the Tech, I did send you that. If you can play that, it's only, I think, I don't know, 15 seconds long. But the message that this will send, there it is on screen, folks. And John, if you can take a look at that.
I've seen it. It's just it's quite a deal.
So, do you think, was that a drone that you, or I mean,
I couldn't tell what was used to blow it up. It's most likely the U.S. Navy. It could have been the Air Force. It wasn't machine gun fire. It was either a rocket or artillery, I would say.
Man, I'll tell you what, that I saw that and I thought, great. I mean, that is exactly what should be deployed. And you know, the cartels coming up from the southern border or northern border should get the same treatment on land or on water. We're being invaded. And by the way, that's supported by an executive order that President Trump signed on his first day of office. But verified 11 narco terrorists were killed. So there you go.
Well, it's unfortunate that they died, but they chose their profession, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. We all have free will. We all have our decisions to make. We make them, and we suffer the consequences or enjoy the. Enjoy the decisions that we make, but my goodness, that sends a powerful message. That's all I'll say on that.
It does. It does absolutely send a powerful message. Anyway, Doug, we haven't talked much about preparedness. We kind of touched on here and there. Ultimately, what we're dealing with is spiritual war. The depopulationists, they want to murder everybody on the planet except for 500 million, I believe it is, which is a tiny percentage of what we got now. China, of course, has its own agenda. They intend to conquer the United States and have it become a new China with no Americans present. That's a whole different topic there. So I encourage everybody to pray without ceasing, to get skills that will be helpful in the future, if we do come under attack, such as ham radio skills and emergency medical treatment skills. There are many, many other skills that a person will want to have, but those are two that will be in shortest supply and in biggest demand. If you can, move away from a big city, 80 or 100 miles at a good altitude where you can have a garden, have some chickens, and be self-sufficient. That's the ideal thing, is to have a hobby farm. A hobby farm is a place where the fruits and vegetables and meat are meant for consumption by the people who live there, not for sale. Obviously, you sell extra if you get it. But a hobby farm, a safe distance from a city, is a really smart thing to do. And it's a fun life and a healthy life compared to living in a city.
Amen to that. Even if you live in a suburban area, you can raise chickens. I mean, my goodness, I really thought it would be an ordeal. Now, I don't have chickens, but I thought it would be an ordeal to raise them. And so I did some research. It's not that big of a deal. Yeah. Okay.
As long as you have roosters, you can be in an urban area with no problem. The roosters would be problematic for the noise they make. But the hens don't make any noise. And they're simple. They're dumb animals. They're easy to take care of, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. So there are things, even if you have space problems in terms of where you live, you know, small property, you can do things, even grow your own small garden. There are ways to do that. Vertical gardening, interesting concept on that. So many things you can do on your own. And I'm going to get your comment real quick on the metals prices. Folks, have you seen the price of gold, silver lately? Silver has broken over 40. I think it's 41 now an ounce, and gold over 35. I think it was 3,540 around that close. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we're not watching the value of the gold or silver change. What we're watching is the value of the paper dollars attempting to buy it change.
Correct.
The decade after decade, century after century, gold remains about the same value. Silver remains about the same value. What's changing is the value of the paper attempting to buy it. And
I think purchasing power is probably the, in other words, you could, with an ounce of gold purchased 30 years ago, it can do the same today, or 40 or 100 years ago, or 1,000. Well, you get what I mean.
Exactly.
Concept. But what John said is more technically accurate. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I've looked into owning gold and silver for a client of mine, and I found out the following when it comes to homeowners insurance. The yearly premium is half the dollar value of the gold or silver. So if you own $1,000, if you own $1,000 worth of gold, the annual premium would be $500 the first year, $500 the second year, $500 the third year, and so forth. So it's not, most people would not do that, obviously.
Wow.
So it's an issue. There's the alternative banks would be private storage companies that have bank level security. And are not subject to government edicts, not quite as easily. That would be the best way. If you have anything more than a couple of $1,000 worth of gold or silver, I would have it in a private vault where they have bank-level security,
right,
as opposed to a lockbox in a bank, which would be subject to government edict. So that's what I would do.
I frankly, if I had enough to worry about, I suppose I probably would, I don't know, if I was intent on keeping it, either buy a huge safe or burying it. I'm just trying to think of how I would handle that, but I guess my preference would be a huge safe.
Any safe you get, make sure it's got a manual override for electronics. Most new safes have electronics. You don't want your stuff damaged by EMP.
Yeah, not a fan of the electronic safes, especially if just a little tip, life tip, I guess. If you would purchase, because I know that there are relatively smaller safes that have the keypad on them, you know.
Right.
And I want nothing
to do with that kind of safe.
No.
Unless it's got a manual override that you can bypass the electronics, it's a big mistake in my opinion.
Exactly. And you put them in a, let's say in the basement that has you don't have a dehumidifier, there's some moisture problems. All of a sudden, that becomes a problem. You cannot get into your own safe unless it's got a manual override. You're exactly correct. So just little things to think about. But for papers and such, they do have vertical safes or horizontal safes with it'd be like a file cabinet, if you will, small file drawer, I should say. So I'd recommend those for documents. Okay. John, I know that you've got a lot of, look, you got an early morning. You probably had a busy day. I know that you probably travel lagged. So I don't want to keep you, my friend, but John Moore, thelibertyman.com. You can ride the show with me and you can continue to offer your wisdom. But I know that you're dog butt tired. But folks, I just want to say this. TheLibertyMan.com, that's the place to go for information, news, and, of course, access to his show. And it comes on, tell me again, because I listen to archives.
Right. Well, the live show is 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Time. It'll be 8 to 11 Eastern. In the archives, we got on Rumble and Brighteon, which are video, by the way, video archives. You can listen anytime you want to.
Love that. So Rumble, Brighteon, and of course via John's website. It's all, you can get to everywhere via John's website, thelibertyman.com. Anything else in closing, my friend? Again, because I know you've got an early morning.
Well, I get up to go to work in 5 hours. That's okay. You know, I make that sacrifice. I just want to remind people that it is a spiritual battle, and to pray every day, pray without ceasing, get the skills, and do a little something every day to get ready.
All right. John, again, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all that you do. And I know not too many people are going to be, not too many people like you and I are going to be remain standing in the not too distant future without a huge fight. So, hey, pray for John, pray for this platform. John, I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Appreciate it. Well, I'll see you next month. We appreciate it.
All right, my friend. Okay, folks, all right, good night. Folks, that was John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com. God bless that man. Yeah, I just wanted to address something I saw earlier in the chat about a dust up. Okay, with more than a dust up. I saw what you saw between on InfoWars, Alex Jones and Owen Schroer. For those who don't know, Owen Schroer left InfoWars. It was an ugly mess. I'll just say that, public mess. I'm friends with both Alex Jones and Owen Schroer. Now, this was building up for quite some time. My only comment on this, I respect both men. Both men have type A personalities. Okay. And with respect to both gentlemen, I would not have handled it in the manner in which either one did. Okay, just saying. And I would say that directly to Alex as well as Owen. I just wouldn't have handled it that way. But let's put that aside for a moment. I will say this. There is something that is taking place, and this could be an exhibit of that, or maybe even evidence of this. There is an attack taking place right now. There are attacks taking place in the spiritual against the people who are attempting to do the work to expose the truth. Something is happening at a level higher than egos, at a level higher than hurt feelings, at a level higher. Look upon this and things like this as casualties of exactly that, the war against truth tellers. I'm telling you right now, there's something going on. There's something that has been ratcheted up. And that's why I asked John earlier to about the holographic, but if he had seen an uptick of people talking about how the earth or how our existence or everything around us is kind of like the Truman Show, choreographed. Have you noticed an uptick of people saying, wait a second, we're living in a simulation? Have you noticed? Have you seen that? And have you seen as well the number, not just of videos, but the number of people flipping their lids, losing their minds, seemingly losing their minds? Now, I understand this. I understand the percentage. John talked about the percentage of the population versus the percentage of criminal activity. It's out of balance. It always has been out of balance, but it's becoming more obvious. But it's beyond that. It's far beyond that. The reason I bring that up now is because we are in this fight. And as I mentioned to John when he was leaving, there will be additional casualties. You can expect that. And it saddens me. If you're going to see attacks like you've never seen before. And I'm talking before the gun confiscations. Do you think there will be? Absolutely. Do you think there are going to be confiscations on precious metals if you own them? Well, just look at history for both. That's coming. But before that happens, you're going to see platforms taken out. You're going to see the strong people in the population just relentlessly attacked. We may be in one's perception winning right now, but that can change. And I sense it will change. And I'm speaking from the heart here. I'm sensing it will change in the near term. And when I say near term, talking about within our generation. And the last thing I want to close with, a lot of people don't think the unthinkable can happen here. Whatever that might be in your case, folks. Oh, it can. It absolutely can happen. In fact, expect it, because if you don't expect it, you're going to be woefully unprepared. So that's why we have to realize, in my view. One more thing. You know, in the past, we've talked about various things like the Abramovic spirit cooking. Remember about the child sex trafficking and such. Now, we are winning on in certain areas or certain respects there. But folks, that activity, that type of activity is really ratcheting up. And you may say, well, you know what? Hey, look, somebody got their comeuppance at Burning Man. Did you see that? Where there was an alleged sacrifice or an alleged murder at the Burning Man festival or party, if you will, in the desert. Look into that. It's not just a murder. It's something more. The reason I bring all of this up is kind of piggybacking on my last show I did. I think right now we are in this, as Steve Bannon would say, the fourth turning. That's more of a cultural, social, industrial, if you will, change. But there is also a spiritual turning right now that's taking place. Or being ratcheted up. And I just want to mention that this, what we're seeing right now, don't dwell, please don't dwell on the ugliness of what happened, for example, with InfoWars, because you're going to see that more and more and more elsewhere. Just pray, as John said, pray without ceasing. Pray for the fighters. Pray for the people in this fight. And folks, also, turn your eyes to God, because in the end, that's all we've got. And that's our true Savior, the God of heaven.